When I think about picking their opportunity, I really think about it in three dimensions. Number one, the company itself. Number two, the team. And number three, the role itself. If you look at a lot of people's careers, even some of the most successful people out there, they have windy careers, right? Their careers are all over the place. There may be the circles or like loops or like squiggly lines or whatever you call them, because it's these sort of random lines and whatnot that leads people to insights, aha moments, and opportunities that they would have never dreamed of.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Product Marketing Life podcast, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. I'm Colin Majak, lead PMM at Klassi. And in this episode, I got a chance to sit down with the queen of PMM career building, Yilin Pei. Now, if you don't know Yilin, Yilin is a career coach and the founder of Courageous Careers. And in this episode, we dove into all things product marketing careers. We talked about Yilin's experience climbing the PMM ladder, in particular as a woman of color, how to analyze your next job opportunity, and how to build a career that works around your values. I really enjoyed this episode. It was like a free coaching session for me, and I think it'll be a good one for you too. Enjoy the episode. Hey, Yilin, thank you so much for coming on the show. It feels so good to finally meet you.
Hi, Colleen. It's so great to be here. I'm really happy that you reached out and just excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I have to say, I've had an impression, a positive impression of you since pretty much day one, because not only do you just write a lot of really great content, but I remember I had just gone through a layoff, which feels like the badge of honor of working in tech these days.
Yeah.
And I was looking for opportunities, and there was an opportunity at one of your previous employers. And I just remember being so struck by how willing you were to give me a really thoughtful response when I said, hey, how'd you like this place? And give me the lay of the land on who I should connect to. And there was just this zero hesitation willingness to help, which I know you probably get a lot of messages. You probably have a lot of people flooding your DMs with career advice. And so it just left this positive impression of, oh, this person's the real deal. So all that to say, I feel very grateful that we're finally meeting and I'm really excited to talk to you.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. No, I really hope they hired you, you know, so I really want to just refer good candidates and, you know, share as much information as I possibly can. So, but yeah, thanks for saying that. It's an honor for me to be here.
Yeah. And another reason I'm excited to have you on, because in my mind, you are the career coach for product marketers. Like you are the person who's putting a lot of content out in that space and have kind of owned that. And there are other people there, but you've sort of owned that niche by putting out really helpful content for product marketers on how to advance their careers. And so I want to get to what you're up to with Courageous Careers, but I would love to just kind of rewind a bit and kind of show like a little bit of how you got here. So can you give me a glimpse of your product marketing career and what sort of led you up to eventually becoming a coach in this capacity?
Absolutely. So I guess I'll step back just a little bit to prior, before I started doing product marketing, I was actually a transportation engineer. So I went to school for civil engineering. And then So my first year, 6 years after graduating from college was in consulting. So I was working as a transportation engineering consultant. If you don't know what that means, no worries, because a lot of people don't know what that is. And, you know, while I was kind of climbing that corporate ladder and trying to get into the partner track, I just felt less and less happy in my role. And I knew something needed to change. So I made a big decision, left my job at that time, and then went to get an MBA. And because at the time, I actually didn't know what I wanted to do. So in the program, I took a marketing class, and then suddenly just the light bulb moment went off in my head and realized that marketing was the perfect combination of creativity and the analytical side that I really crave for. So decided at that moment, I wanted to pursue a marketing career. And so that's when I started getting into marketing, first landed a role as a content marketer at Autodesk, and then pivoted into product marketing. And then for the past 6 years, I've been kind of working my way across different types of product marketing roles before, you know, deciding to go on my own and becoming a coach. So yeah, that's just like a gist of my story in 1 minute.
No, that's super helpful. And actually, you know what? I hear you talking about landing that first role at Autodesk, and I feel like that makes sense of your experience and then getting this MBA, and then Autodesk feels like this convergence of you can kind of take your knowledge of this customer space and engineering and building and kind of have, you have your eyes on a world that they serve to some degree. There's some, it's not perfect.
Absolutely. The voice of the customer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think to your point, that was, you know, you would have thought, right, getting an MBA would automatically make you getting a job easier, but it's not the case. And, you know, I actually had one of the hardest times getting a job. Well, in fact, I wasn't even getting any interviews, right? Like my classmates, they were getting jobs at Google, Amazon, and all these big names. And I wasn't even getting interviews because they were like, what is this person trying to apply for marketing jobs, having basically no marketing background whatsoever? And so getting the job at Autodesk was actually the first insight that I had around how to job search, which is you have to offer something that the employer want, right? That you have that maybe other people don't have. And that advantage that I had was my experience in civil engineering, right? So I don't think they're going to find another person who has civil engineering background and who is going to be a content marketer at the time. So, you know, so to me, that sort of was like the initial spark that shaped sort of my philosophy and approach to job searching.
Yeah. That, I haven't articulated it that way, but that feels very consistent with my experience. Like I think of my first PMM role was at a company called Subsplash that serves the church market. They have their tech for churches. And my background was I worked in a church for years and had degrees in that. Like I just knew that world. And that was my, they took a chance on me as a project manager who on a marketing team to become a PMM. Because they're like, well, you know, you have some marketing chops because you've been in and around it and managing it and you know our customer. And they took that leap. And then the same is true with my role at Classy, where I just come from a space of building fundraising predictions effectively. So machine learning models and that predict donor behavior. And Classy was like, there's not a lot of people who have that experience. Oh, we will we'll hire you. Like that was a standout thing, even with people who have more time in the field.
Oh, I love that. That's such a, you have such an interesting background.
it's been eclectic, but same with you. I want to go down that rabbit hole, but there's a bunch of other things I still want to ask.
Yeah.
I'm so curious about that. Well, I'll do one. I'll entertain the rabbit hole one way. You said how your background in engineering set you up for marketing because marketing has this blend of creative and analytical. And in my mind, it shows how I skew with my personality because I naturally lean creative. And I feel like a lot of people talk like you associate marketing with creative. I'd be curious, where do you feel like that analytical engineering part of you has shown up the most in product marketing?
That is a really great question. I will say the analytical piece for me, it comes in two ways. One is just data, right? Like just actually understanding and analyzing data. So for me, that has always been pretty easy. When I go to a company, I try to analyze all kinds of data, right? From actual business performance data, like how are we doing across the business as a whole? So a lot of times when I go to a company, I try to assess the different growth levers for a company. I would do it myself, right? Or maybe talk to the data team. What are we doing in terms of acquisition? What are the different metrics that we have around the different parts of our acquisition funnel? And what are different metrics and how are we measuring against those metrics? Well, and same thing when it comes to retention as well as monetization, right? So by being extremely numbers driven, I'm able to quickly figure out any gaps and opportunities, right, that could arise. So maybe we're doing very good top of funnel. We're doing some great awareness campaigns on whatnot that's generating results, but maybe it's not converting well, very well middle of the funnel. So then I can say, okay, well, I'm going to see if there's any opportunities for me as a product marketer to help out more in the middle of funnel part, right? So then whatever I'm doing will have the highest ROI. So I think being extremely business metrics driven is important. Then, of course, there are other areas of analytics that are important. For instance, looking at product analytics, right? Like if you, especially if you're working for a PLG company, just understanding adoption, right? Activation and those kind of things that is really important to help you get any insights that could lead to better product development, product flow, which could then help you influence how product managers and product designers even, right? Develop the product. And then of course, insights from the market. So doing analysis on market segmentation, right? Personas, all of those things. And then capturing feedback from the market and all of that and sharing it back into field teams. So I will say like data shows up pretty much in everything and everywhere in product marketing. And I think the person who's able to kind of peel back the layers of the onion to kind of uncover that, they will have power because data equals to insights, insights equals strategy, and strategy equals to power at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And honestly serves as a good counterbalance to, I think, how I'm wired and maybe how a lot of product marketers are wired. Because I think a lot of product marketers enter their next role. And when they think about the first area they're going to make impact, it's messaging, it's positioning, mm-hmm. it's, mm-hmm. oh, I want to change this thing on the hero immediately or something like that. You know, like they want to make these very like messaging. And I would say there's all sorts of data that can go into that, but it is a little bit more intuitive and soft skills and creative. Yeah, it's the art. It's the art of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think what you're bringing in is really that science and trying to say, what if first couple of days you're getting all the data and you're collecting the data and then making your insights out of that, which is probably way more powerful than when, I don't know, I see it as, I mean, ideal world, you can marry both, but that's a really helpful corrective, I think, to how I'm wired for what if you started analytical?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's great. You have that art side because ultimately I do think you need both sides to succeed as a product marketer. And there are some people who lean more towards the one side than the other. And it's, I think it's important to lean into that, right? Because that is your superpower and your strength. And one of the biggest superpowers of product marketing, in my opinion, is positioning and messaging. And that is more art than science because it's storytelling, right? It's emotional and should be impactful and things. But then you can do a better job at the art side if you use the science piece as well. So to your point, the input to great positioning and messaging is a great understanding of this, your target customer, right, the segmentation, and all of that, which will have to come from some data analysis and strategic thinking. And then it will lead you to have better positioning and messaging down the line, right? And then you can even measure the outcome and the impact of that even better if you attach metrics to it. So, you know, I think it's like in the ideal world, they work in perfect harmony. I don't think I've perfected it myself, but at least that's what I strive for and try to coach people on to think from these different perspectives.
Yeah. Now, I want to get a little bit more into the kind of career side of this, but I think something that is so cool already before we talk about that is the way that you talk about this discipline with such a clear first person knowledge of it. And I feel like there's a lot of people who want to short circuit the jump to solopreneurship or to coaching or something like that without the years of earning the chops. And I just want to say like already, I appreciate that you just clearly have all this substance behind all of that. Now, there are a lot of people, though, who do make that climb and they earn their stripes, but they don't decide then to kind of turn around and help people do the same. Mm. I would be curious, what do you think it was about PMM specifically and your PMM career that stood out to you enough that when you look back, you're like, oh, it's worth giving my time to help people navigate this?
Yeah, well, first of all, I will say I had a hard time getting into the field. So that was, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, it's such a tough experience. Same. I know other people are going through the same thing. So there is a desire to help people because I know how challenging it is. And then the second thing I will say, maybe a little bit unrelated to PMM, but just in general, is I always loved coaching and teaching people. Interesting story is when I was back in college, you know, I was trying to make some money, extra money supporting myself when I was going through college. I was an engineering major. So I was very fortunate to get a job as a math tutor. So I was tutoring freshman calculus when I was a sophomore myself, right? And then that became like one of the most amazing experiences I've had because I realized I could actually help people get better. There are people who are failing, right? Calculus. And then I was able to explain very complex concepts, you know, like derivatives, integrals, and all that to them in a way that they actually understood and also was able to, you know, improve on their tests and everything. So I said, oh, wow, I actually really enjoy this. And I do have potentially a skill to explain complex things in a simple way so people understand. And that always stayed with me. So then as I progressed in my career, even as a product marketer, I always enjoyed coaching my own team, right? And also just sort of like on the side was just kind of mentoring other people as well. So then one triggering event happened was during COVID, a lot of people got laid off, including some of my own teammates. So I just put out some notice on LinkedIn just to say, hey, you know, if you're looking for any help to review your, you know, resumes and whatnot, I'm here to help. And I was overwhelmed by the people who reached out to me asking for help. And I was actually able to get them results. And so some of them started telling me, wow, maybe you should do this more seriously. So that's kind of how I started. So, you know, I think maybe what I'm trying to say here is that it's less like I was trying to plan this perfect path for myself to, you know, to monetize, you know, like I built this very successful business, but it was more driven by just an innate desire and just, you know, I guess superpower that I have that just seemed to make sense, gave me a lot of energy and sounded fun.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the best, I don't want to use the word product, but it is in some ways a product. You have something you offer, but a lot of the best products have that sort of origin story where it's close to the founder's heart and out of their own experience, stumbled into market demand sort of by accident and by giving it away for free. And then they get traction like that. So that feels totally consistent to me.
Yeah.
I would be curious. I'll go for it.
No, I was going to say the one other thing, I guess, I always wanted to mention is I actually intentionally designed my product marketing career so that I would be industry agnostic and I would have a very varied experience. So for instance, when I first started it, as I mentioned to you, Autodesk, it was a very big company, 10K plus people. I realized, okay, I have experienced this company at the, you know, when this is super mature, I want to go kind of experience a company at a later stage startup. So then I went to like a Series E startup with about like 1,000 something people. Then I was like, okay, I felt confident enough. I want to become a solo product marketer and just build a founding product marketing team. So then I went to a Series A company in New York, you know, and became the founding PM member and built everything from scratch. And then I was like, okay, I've done a lot of B2B at this point, but I really want to go into a PLG company. And that's when I went to a Teachable, right? And so then had a PLG experience working for a series, like a mid-stage growth company. So basically, I think, you know, one of the other reasons I wanted to become a coach is also help people just kind of figure out and explore, kind of help them cultivate different career options for themselves, right? So they don't have to be stuck, you know, on this one path or feel like if they just do this one thing, they can't do something else. So, yeah.
Well, I want to pick your career coach brain on that specifically, because I think when you talk about being industry agnostic, that's immediately really appealing to me. Because I have to venture that a guess that it is probably appealing to a lot of PMMs, right. But the reality, and I can see how you could collect experiences that are size agnostic. Like even in my own experience, I've been Series A, pre-seed, and now I'm at a larger scale company. I've bounced around. The nut that's a little bit harder to crack for me is the industry agnosticism, where because there seems to be almost an obsessive value of, yeah. You've done RevOps. We're going to hire you now because you're the new RevOps company is going to hire right. you. And that's where you're wanted. And even the pay tends to go up and because you're the person on that. So I'd be curious as it comes to not getting too narrowed down in an industry. What would be your advice on that front? Because it seems like the pull of gravity is just pulling towards, like you pick one industry and you're now the PMM for X industry.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think with the whole job market, right, where it's very employer centric, given a lot of people are out of jobs, it's becoming more risk averse. So employers are becoming more risk averse and they would like to hire people more within that industry background. So I can see how this creates even more sort of pigeonholing for somebody's career path.
For sure.
So I would say, you know, I think of anything, like any sort of decision, or goal that we want to make into like, it's an iterative process, right? It's not like suddenly I go from here to like the top of Mount Everest, like, you know, my dream job with like everything check off the box, right? Utopia. If we have that destination we want to get to, what are the different steps we need to take right now to make incremental steps towards that? So potentially, let's say for the next role, you want to get out of the space you're in, right? It doesn't make sense for you to go suddenly find a job that is a completely different size where you have no experience whatsoever, right? Because that would be too big of a leap. So then you want to see, okay, what's the next thing that still has commonality with your current job, but then would change one variable, right?
Interesting, yeah.
So then you can say, okay, maybe I can find a company where there's also like three other marketers or something, or three-ish marketers, because you have operated in that environment and that size before. Maybe it is another B2B company, right? Or if it is, just, you know, assuming that, right, where you have that experience. And then the variable you are changing is the industry itself, right? And then you can see if you can get traction there. And once you're in that job, then you can change other variables. So with each job, you're basically changing one variable at a time. So then eventually you're going to get to where you're going, right? So like, just give you my own example. My first job was Autodesk, which was sort of civil engineering focused. My second job, it was still civil engineer adjacent because we were selling into architects and real estate developers, right? So it was close, but not exactly, right? And then the next one I had was completely different. It was like fintech or something, because now I had experience with launching products from zero to one. So I leveraged that experience to the next job. That was a commonality, right? And then I switched industry. So you can kind of see like how it's kind of like interlinking, interlocking one job to the next.
And that makes sense, because then that, whatever that commonality is, kind of becomes your pitch.
That is your pitch.
And if it's not the industry pitch, you can make the, say you're a founding PMM, you've done it before. Like, hey, I've been the founding PMM before. I know what it takes to be a founding PMM, build this from ground up. Like, you kind of enter that rather than the, I know the customer and I know the industry. You pick some other area to.
Right. Absolutely. And I will say the other part to do it is also to make them feel you can learn about the industry very quickly, right? And it's not a problem. So potentially you can show them your existing knowledge about the industry already, right? You can read up on it. So like, if I apply for a job in like, I don't know, a fintech, and I have absolutely no idea what are even different types of banks that exist, right? It would definitely not go very well. But I think taking some time to actually learn more about the industry before interviewing and showcase all that stuff you've done already to understand the industry, I think goes a long way of also kind of sort of like handling that objection from the employer.
Yeah, that all is very helpful. I want to continue to treat some of this time almost as like a career coaching session with you.
Sure, of course.
I've been thinking about this, about your advice, kind of from two angles. One being the really close up view of a PMM who is looking for their next role. And then a little bit of this kind of macro level of someone who's thinking about where their PMM career is headed. So I want to start with that close up level a little bit. More often than not, I feel like moving up in your career involves the eventual choice to leave your current company. You have to analyze a new company and figure if they're going to be a better fit than your current one. So if you could put yourself in the shoes of that product marketer who's thinking about their next role, what sort of lenses would you put on when you're evaluating if a company is going to be a good fit?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, especially like as we discussed, right? Like, whether the job market is good or bad, you have to spend some time picking the right company, because it can make a huge impact for your career. And so when I think about picking their opportunity, I really think about it in three dimensions. Number one, the company itself. Number two, the team. And number three, the role itself. So let's kind of dive into each one a little bit. So from a
company team role.
Mm-hmm, company team role. So it's kind of going from big to small, right? Like broader than to narrower. So for company, culture alignment is very obvious, right? Because ultimately you want to be in the place that is providing you with the right environment for you to succeed. And if it's not the culture environment and it's like a toxic place, certainly you don't want to be there. Second thing is the growth potential and health of the company. You can have the highest title and highest pay possible, but if you're on the sinking ship, that's not going to work, right? It's just going to go nowhere. So, yeah. And that's extremely important today because there are a lot of companies are not doing really well, right? That's why we have so many rounds of layoffs. Unfortunately, there are people who reach out to me who have joined a company, supposedly a great title, 3 to 6 months later got laid off, right? Caught in another round of layoffs because the company is doing well. So like vetting the company on their financial health and their business strategy is super important. And of course, the other dimension of company is just that the product area actually excites you. You feel like they are doing something good, right? That in an area that you feel like is actually driving innovation and progress. And so coming down to the second part, which is team, right? Most important part of the team is your manager. So I've posted a lot about this, and I think everyone would agree. People don't leave jobs because of the job itself. A lot of time they leave because of the manager, because they're the person who really can make or break your career, right? If you have a great manager, they can 10x your growth and vice versa. So vetting the manager is super important. Do they jive with you? Like, what kind of track record do they have, right, of supporting and growing employees, right? Other aspects include your peers. Do you feel like they are smart, supportive, competent? You can work together. They're givers, right? They're not like just takers mm-hmm. or for themselves. And of course, leadership. So the company C-suite, because that ties back into the first point, which is the company, because you have great leaders, they can make tough business decisions that will help drive the company forward, right? And they're like sane, you know, smart and humane leaders. That's kind of who you want. And the last aspect is the role itself, right? You can have great company, great team, but if the role is not quite aligned with where you want to go in your career or what you offer, that's not going to fly either. So I think this is a really good opportunity to understand why are they hiring for this role right now? And what is the responsibility of this role? And what is the potential for growth in this role? So that you can see if you're the best person for doing this job, and also is it going to allow you to basically grow into different areas, right, where you don't have skills yet. Yeah. So if you check up the box 100% and there's no room for growth, probably going to be bored, right, very quickly in that role. But if you go into a role and it's just not your, it's not aligned with your superpowers, your strengths, you're going to feel out of place and you're not going to be able to deliver the quality of work that's needed of you, right? That would not work as well. So it's sort of like this balance of the different responsibility in that role. So I'll just stop there and see if you have any questions or follow up.
No, that's super helpful thinking about it, going from that company to team to individual role. And I can affirm on that second one of team, I can affirm that there was a company I worked at where the company was fine. In retrospect, it was just fine, but the leader was amazing. And honestly, if it weren't for layoffs, I think I would have stayed there a lot longer. Just because I really enjoyed working for that boss. And so, to affirm on that, the question that comes to mind for me is: I feel like it's almost easier to assess company and then team if you're just basing it on what do I like. Is this the leader being kind of taking up a lot of that pie in your assessment? The one that feels hard for me is role, because I feel like a lot of times, particularly if it's a new role, it's easier if it's a backfill, but if it's a new role, it's hard to analyze what do I actually do in this role day in, day out. Do you have any questions that you ask, one or two, that you feel like help someone who's interviewing get to the heart of really having a grasp on that role and what it's going to involve?
Yeah, great question. I would say number one question to ask is, why do we have this role? why are you hiring for this role right now? Just tell them like, so that you understand, is it part of a business strategy or did they just hear from somebody like product marketing is good, so you should hire a product marketer, right? But can't even explain why they're hiring, right? Then you know, okay, that may not be the best place for you to be. The other question is also, how do they define product marketing? So I would ask, what would be your definition of success in product marketing? What would be the responsibilities of this product owner, and what would be outside of the scope of product marketer? Because I have actually seen a lot of jobs and hiring managers add a lot of demand gen responsibility into product marketing, yeah, like they're like, oh, you're going to be supporting these campaigns, you know, you're going to be doing all this. I'm like, these are not product marketing at all. Right. And so you become a glorified, like, you know, demand gen person when you go into the company and you have no time to work on strategic things like positioning and messaging. Right. So I think just getting them to define the scope, that could be really helpful and important. And then of course, the other question is just, what do you see, what would the, how would this role evolve, right? Like, well, you know, obviously what do you expect this person to achieve in this job in the next 3 to 6 months and 1 year from now? And do you have sort of like a vision and roadmap for how this role as well as the team is going to evolve over the next 2 years? They may not have all the answers like in detail, but they should have a plan, right, of growth for this team. That means they're thinking long-term about not this just this position, but the team as a whole and how it's going to expand and support your career. I have definitely seen hiring managers hire for a role because of an immediate need, because we're like, oh, we just have this big project come up, so we need to hire for this thing. But they never thought about what's going to happen after the project is done. So then do you just, like, there was no plan, right, post that. So, you know, those are just like a few questions I can think of at the top of my head. But I can send you some more later.
Oh, that's good. No, that second, both of those are really helpful. I think if you can hear them just quickly articulate the problem that they think that headcount is going to solve, that tells you a lot about what they're expecting of that role. It's like, oh, we can't get any leads. You're like, well, this doesn't quite sound like, I don't know if we're talking about the same role or.
Right. Exactly.
And then that second one is also super, super helpful. I think I can, because there, I mean, for me, the role I just took, that sort of came up where it was clear, like, oh, there's a vision for this new line of products that we're hiring this person to fill out. That's like question one. We're building this new line of products and we want someone to own it. Cool. And then future state, we think this is not just one product. We think it's multiple products. And so we think this is this opportunity that this person's going to get to have is to kind of oversee and grow with that. So for me, I see that mapping onto experience and really helping inform my last decision.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, good to hear.
Yeah, it's helpful. But those two very pointed questions, I imagine, are crazy helpful. Now, I would love to zoom out a little bit, because, and we hinted at this earlier with kind of the niching down discussion. But for me, it's really easy to get caught up in the role I'm doing today.
Yeah.
And, or if it's the next, or just the next role I'm going to take, if it's a comp thing or a company that sounds interesting. And I have this fear that someday I will look up and feel like I didn't take my career where I actually wanted it to go, you know, but it sort of took me, like, almost like I just floated down the career river.
And
a part of that, I think, comes from, like, I'm not sure where I want to go, but I don't want to look up and be like, oh, I just was carried down the river. You know, I want to be in the canoe. I want to steer that thing. I want to know I forked left when I could have forked right. You know, I want to feel clarity on that. So for someone who's in my shoes, who can easily get kind of caught up in what they're doing today, how would you go about making a career plan so that you avoid that feeling down the line where, oh, I ended up here by accident? If that's the feeling you want to avoid, what's the kind of advice you would have for planning for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love the river analogy. I may have to steal that at some point.
Feel free.
Yeah. So, you know, I fully resonate with what you're saying, because deciding what to do next in our career is really, really hard. And, you know, that's what I had that challenge earlier in my career, right? Feeling completely stuck in my 6-year journey as a consultant, just like, this sucks, but I don't know what to do. So, you know, I think the first thing I will say before even jumping into tactics is just resetting our mind so that we're not sort of like stuck on this idea of a perfect career path, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when we're taught, either in school or like from early, you know, whichever we're reading, is that, oh, there's this career ladder that we're supposed to climb, and this linear ladder, we just go up the stairs, right? And we're supposed to know everything from beginning to the end, right?
Yeah.
That's not true at all. If you look at a lot of people's careers, even some of the most successful people out there, they have windy careers, right? Their careers are all over their place. There may be just circles or like loops or like squiggly lines or whatever you call them, because it's these sort of random lines and whatnot that leads people to insights, aha moments, and opportunities that they would have never dreamed of, right? So I think it's first of all, letting go of the idea of that linear career path and embrace the windiness down your river, up your river, basically, right? That is really, really important. And then by actually doing that, then you can let go of what's holding you back and what holds a lot of people back. All right. Which is, oh my God, what if I make the wrong move? Then that's going to be no return, right? This is going to really suck, right?
Yeah. I get totally paralyzed by that.
Exactly. Like, right. Yeah, because you're afraid of making the wrong move. Right. And so that's same thing. A lot of my clients kind of come to me. They're like, oh my God, I don't want to make a wrong move. Right. And what do I do? First of all, just letting go of perfection immediately should help ease your fear that actually allows you to move forward.
Yeah.
After you've done that, right, is then starting the process of seeking clarity. And for that, I'm a big believer in design thinking. So a lot of this process actually is rooted in design thinking principles with a dash of, you know, consulting and product marketing in there and personal touch. The first step I would say is to write out your future vision story, because you do have to envision some place in the future where you want to be, right? So that you can actually get there. But the thing is, by this vision story, I don't mean writing out this dry thing of like, I want a job 2 years from now. I want to be, I don't know, director with $300,000, right? It's like, oh, that's not, that's not what we're talking about. I really want to understand intrinsically, right? What's your day like? It's like, what time do you get up in the day, right? You're going to take 30 minutes just doing your morning pages, journaling, right? You take your kids to school and then you have meetings, a couple of meetings with people you really like in this like supportive environment. At 5 o'clock, you know, you clock off, right? You log off and then you just unplug for the rest of the evening, spending time with your kids, right? That could be one version of your vision, or another version. Yeah. Some person might be completely different. They're like, I am in this amazing discussions with investors, where we're talking about business strategy, we're in the war room doing blah, 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 right? Like, I'm very important, I'm on stage, you know, like, very different vision, right? But having that is important because it really helps you to visualize and picture what that would look like. And that would then help you inform 2 to 3 options to potentially get from where you are today to where you are going in the future. So, you know, this part is really, it sounds very abstract. So I illustrate with a couple of examples. So for instance, one of my clients who did this a couple of years ago, when she came to me, she was like a product marketer. She seems to have fun, but she lost a spark. You know, she was like, what's going on? I don't know. So we did this exercise. She did her visioning exercise. And it was like in her vision, she wasn't actually having any meetings. And, you know, like there was no meetings. It was just her quietly sitting on the side and kind of like journaling and like, you know, being creative in her thoughts and stuff. And we realized product marketing is not the path for her. And so this was an extreme example, but then she actually made the decision to leave her job as a product marketer, enrolled in a creative writing course. And now she's a freelance writer and, you know, and that's working out beautiful for her. Right. And then for somebody else, it could be that they realized what they need to do is go from a very large company with a great name to a smaller startup because that suits them better, right? And I have quite a few clients who are in that situation, right? Doesn't mean quitting product marketing every time, but like you can kind of see how just having the vision can kind of give you different options. So once you figure out the 2 to 3 options, right, the next step after that is to prototype some of the experiences. So part of design thinking is also about testing. So if you don't want to just make a hypothesis and then just jump straight into it, be like, oh yeah, I decided I'm going to do that. So you do want to talk to people, have coffee chats with people who are already in some of those paths you're on, right? The great thing is you're not the first person to ever make that decision to do that. So you can find people, reach out to them, have chats, really understand what their day-to-day is like, what their struggle, how did they make it there? So you can understand it. Maybe you can even take up some pro bono projects. You can volunteer, right? To start dipping your toes into those paths so you can see how it's really like, because that allows you to gather more information. And then once you do that, you can then decide on the one path you feel like would be the easiest to accomplish right now. And that will give you the most energy to start making small steps towards there, right? Sometimes you can directly go straight into that path, just find a different job. Sometimes it requires closing different skill gaps, right? So you may have to do different projects or even go back to school or whatnot to get there. So, but I think ultimately it's the sort of like future looking process, then working backwards to where you're today, finding multiple paths, prototyping that, and then take the smallest step to get there.
Yeah. Okay. Wildly helpful. My brain, that felt like actually a career coaching session for me. Cause I started like working through like, all right, actually, what would actually make up my vision? And so let me just start by saying that's super helpful. And I really like this idea of starting with the vision because I think, and then that you went on to paint a very wide view of what that vision can be. Mm-hmm. Because I think the gravitational pull in tech and in product marketing is what you go from product marketer to senior PMM, yes, to maybe a director of PMM, to either a VP of marketing or a VP of product marketing, depending on your company. And you climb that 200 and 250,000 and 300, like you just keep getting more money and your time gets smaller, right, and you get less and, right, less time.
Right. Exactly.
And when I think about my career down the line, that's not what I want. The part of me, I would love the accolades of that. I love the title. I don't, right, want to work 60 hours. And you're at a big company that pays those kind of dollars. A lot of times that is the reality that comes with it. So I love the permission there to like, all right, filters off. What do you actually want out of your life?
Yes.
And then make a path for that rather than here's how you just climb the ranks of product marketing and,
yeah,
collect titles and logos.
That's so well said. And I love the word you use, the permission, right? Just giving yourself the permission to actually do that and dare to dream, like the vision that you want for yourself. That's not dependent on anybody else, what they think of you, right? Or like, yeah, what their version of success means, right? You don't have to be a VP or CMO to be successful. You can literally, yeah, like, you can be a stay-at-home mom if you want to be. You can be a solopreneur. You can be a freelancer. Or you can even be a senior IC, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't need to be a manager. So all of them are options. Or of course, you can be a CMO or CEO, yeah, or a founder.
Yeah.
So all of
go
them
kill
are
it.
Options.
You want to move to Silicon Valley and do that? Like you go. Like you go king, you go queen. Yeah. Oh, that's super helpful. Thank you for breaking that down. So yeah. I hinted at this before, but part of what I just in general love about the experience you share is that you have lived it and you spent 6 years, I was going to say climbing the PMM ranks. Now it feels more accurate to say floating the PMM river.
Like
you,
I love it.
You spent the time floating that river and helping others do the same. And we talked a lot about the strategy side of all that, but I think I'd be remiss to not lean in on some of the more personal side. Specifically, tech is not known as an environment that's brimming with women of color. And so I would be really curious if you're willing to share, what was your day-to-day like as being a woman of color in tech? What was that like for you and being in those spaces with your experience and background and personality?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that question and giving me the space to talk about it. I will say it's not easy, right? It's an isolating and not empowering experience generally because of those things you've just mentioned. It's not a very diverse or inviting place at times, especially depending on this type of industries you're in tech. And I think the fact that I'm also an immigrant and I speak with an accent compounded the brand, we didn't make it any easier, right? And further helped make me feel more isolated and you know, feel like an imposter a lot of times and an outsider. You know, I think one of the biggest challenges when you are a minority of any kind is that there's of course lots of different biases and everything happening, but also you just lack role models, right? It's really hard for you to aspire to be someone you cannot see, right? So if you don't see a woman in power who looks like you, who speaks with an accent, it's very hard to dream to think that's actually possible. And so, you know, that's kind of, I think, why it's a systemic problem, because then you have less and less, right, of those people, less of them are on top. And I think that's one of the reasons why, perhaps because of this, I became very empowered myself, like because of this lack of diversity and representation, I was like, wait a minute, but I can be that. So I kind of wanted to do more of that for other people. And so as I sort of floated the river or climbed the ladder, I just basically decided to use my own position to help other people. So I would just informally, you know, mentor other people. I would speak up, you know, in one of the companies I mentioned, the Series A startup where I was at, I was part of the founding DEI community for the company and basically started the first ever series where I basically interviewed women CEOs that I just admired, brought them into the company, asked them very deep questions. And I think that helped myself and also a whole lot of people, right? So I think it's like, because of this, it kind of helped push me to be the change that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
And certainly, I mean, there's way more I could do and I can still do. So it's not like I'm saying I'm some saint that I just just doing all this stuff. But I think in some ways, it really kind of like light a fuel in me to do more of this. And that's the reason it's also one of the reasons I share a lot of my thoughts on LinkedIn, because I was like, I don't see many people who look like me or talk like me sharing thoughts like that in our space, right? And that's one of the reasons I want to do that. And I want to talk about these issues are more challenging to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I just even want to recognize how beautiful it is for you to see in the horizon that there's this gap. And to then think, I will try to fill that gap for the sake of others who come behind me, which it just seems is really consistent with your personality and characters. I just want to affirm that. Like, that seems to be just part of Yi Lin, as you see, like, there's something difficult or something that's not as it should be. And I'll endure the hardship so I can help someone behind me, because it really is, it's a luxury going second for someone. Like, whoever goes first always has it the hardest. Mm-hmm. And I think for you to take the sacrifice of like, I'm going to go first, whether it's advancing my career generally or advancing my career as a woman of color in tech. So just to affirm that, that's like a really just beautiful part of you as a person.
Oh, I appreciate that. That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it comes through.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. But I will say, I don't want to take all the credit. I will say the other point is there are people who I have, you know, hugely benefited from, and they did come before me and they did help me a lot to get to where I am. And I think those people are advocates or sponsors. And it's really, really important for anybody who's listening, right? Like, doesn't, you know, no matter where you are, it's just remember, like, there are people who are willing to help you. So try to see if there are people in the company who are naturally just like helpful, you admire them, and build a relationship with them and see if they are willing to support you on your career.
Yeah.
You know, I give this example, I don't know if you read it on LinkedIn, this story I've shared a couple of times, which is when I was early in my days as a consultant, I was very isolated. I was actually in Atlanta, Georgia. Definitely nobody looked like me. And I was in the client meeting, you know, everybody was like mostly white male talking about baseball. And I was like, I don't know anything about baseball. I don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. And I just feel very isolated, right? So there was very awkward beginning to like this like big client meeting. And then suddenly one of my senior associates of the company, who was also white male, by the way, he stopped the conversation. He was like, Elaine, how was your weekend? And I was like, oh, I didn't expect him to ask me at all in front of everyone. And went on to share how my weekend was, made some jokes, everybody laughed, had a great time. And then for the rest of the meeting, I felt more included, because he broke the ice. He invited me to be part of that, right? And then it just went way better. And then from that meeting onwards, we became more, you know, I started to get to know him better and helped him on some projects. And then he started advocating for me, put me on several very high profile projects. That's kind of what allowed me to get promoted, right? So he had a huge role because he became an advocate. So, you know, yes, there are times when we don't have like a woman of color, maybe at that level becoming an advocate, but there are many other people who are allies who are willing to become an advocate. So I think, you know, seeking that out, you know, no matter where you are, would be really helpful.
Yeah. Thank you again, just for sharing your experience. And yeah, I'm sure that we could give a whole podcast on that. But to close, I want to open the door for a hobby horse, if you have one ready.
A
hobby horse. Have you heard of this? Or like, the thing that you are very consistent about, like the drum you always beat, the soapbox you stand on, all that kind of stuff. I would be curious if you could pick one piece of advice for PMMs that you would be willing to just repeat over and over again until you're blue in the face. What would it be?
Oh gosh. I will say it's be 10 times bolder. And it's not something I say a lot on LinkedIn, but it's sort of like a consistent message. I guess it kind of hopefully seeps through. And I think number one, it's kind of goes back to the name of my company, my business, which is Courageous Careers, right? Yeah. Like we have to have courage. There will be a lot of things in our career, our job and everything that's going to be challenging and scary. And so be bold and take that challenge. It's super important from just that confidence perspective of pushing yourself. And the second thing when I talk about being bolder is make big bets when it comes to doing your job as a product marketer. Like if I think back and look back on my career as a product marketer and what allowed me to grow very quickly. And, you know, I was actually promoted from a newbie PMM to director in 3 years, right? And that's because nice. I was able to take big bets. I was able to realize the gaps in the business, make business proposals based on information and data, get buy-in on those, then took charge of those projects to do them. And so the outcome were just they had outsized impact on the business as a whole. And of course, people were promoting yeah. me, right? Because I was able to deliver those business value. I think it's going to be really hard to grow and fast track your career if you're just doing things you're told to do. So you have yeah. to take bets on yourself, be proactive in suggesting things and pushing them through, right? And then getting them done. So I think the bolder here also talks about actually doing like bigger bets yeah. at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to be a refrain of yours, because even earlier we were talking about all that fear of making a wrong decision. And yes. it seems like that's a kind of one of your, that's one of your hobby horses is boldness and courage.
It is boldness. So, yeah. Because yeah. you see, like, even if you fail, you can fail, you know, you can be a catastrophic or brilliant failure, whatever you call it. You would have yeah. grown. You have learned so much yeah. from the process.
Yeah. I heard someone used to talk about failure and they would say, you know, and even if you fail, nobody dies. It's just like, exactly. It's like just trying to like, it's a comedic way of saying like, yeah, even, say you flop that launch. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. it's like, it's B2B. You will live. Like everyone's going to make it out the other side of this.
Exactly. And you'll learn, launch and you'll it learn again. The
time. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Launch it again and you'll learn. Well, Elaine, thank you so much. This was so, so fun and clarifying for me personally. I feel like I think I need to go do some visioneering and think about my career. So I can only imagine that people will want to follow up with you and get a pulse on what you're doing with Courageous Careers. So if people want to learn more about you, connect with what you're up to at Courageous Careers, where could they do that?
Absolutely. Go on my website, Courageous Careers, courageous-careers.com, and they can learn more, all the information and subscribe to my newsletter where I write long form articles about different topics. A lot of them, what we've talked about today in more depth. And of course, you can follow me on LinkedIn, just type in my name, Elaine Pei. And they will be able to see posts that I share weekly. Oh, I'm sorry. There's.
No, you're fine. It's sweet. It's sweet. Hi.
That's my mother-in-law. My daughter is out of school today. Sorry. Do you want me to re-record that?
No, not at all. I mean, this is the whole point, right? You talk about crafting a life that you want, and you have a life where your daughter can come in and be around and you have that flexibility. So no, it stays. Just for context, those listening online, Elin's daughter came in the background. And so, yeah, that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. She does to like to make a surprise entrance. So
my son does the same thing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, yeah.
Again, thank you so much. I'll definitely be pointing people your way after this episode airs, but it was really good to meet you and chat with you.
Of course. So thankful for being down here and of course asking such great questions. Also, you make me think. So that's wonderful.
Well, let's Thanks do it again so sometime.
Of All course. Right. Take care.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.